Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Superchargers, headlights, and more? With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The Volume.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered, with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code JOHN. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code J-O-H-N, JOHN, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What is going on, everybody? How are we doing? Beautiful Monday today. Have a little different show today. We will open up with my buddy. I've known him for a while now. He works at ESPN. His name is Field Yates. He's going to be on the ABC draft coverage on Thursday and Friday and then on ESPN. Got an interesting story, though. Started working for the Pats when he was in high school. Played against Steven Belichick. They're buddies now. And then he played college football where Belichick played. Worked in the NFL for Scott Pioli. I don't know if a lot of people know that, but he'll tell us a little bit about his story. And then obviously we talk draft picks, specifically the quarterbacks. Some teams. It's here, baby. Draft week is here. The game plan this week is, I think I'm going to put out a little mock draft. And for three and out, we do a top 10 mock draft. I'm not doing the whole first round. But we'll do a top 10 mock draft. I got a couple curveballs. I'm already prepared for a couple teams to do things that I don't see a lot of people talking about. Just, you know, educated guesses with a little inside information. Could be wrong. We'll see. But we will put out the mock draft on Wednesday. We will be live, I think, starting like pick five. I'll be on YouTube. I think I'm going to be on Colin's channel. He's going to join me. We'll put it out as a podcast for Friday. I'm definitely going to do another podcast Friday for Saturday based on all the picks. We're going to have a lot of content. Content is going to be flowing. So buckle up. Get ready. Big time of year. I love it. Who doesn't? So let's enjoy this week. It feels like we've been waiting a long time, and it's finally here, and it'll fly by. So Get ready for draft week. We got a lot planned. If you listen on Colin's feed, make sure you subscribe to 3 and Out. If you listen, if you like to watch YouTube, just, you know, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Don't think we will have, because it's draft week, a go low this week. Scottie Scheffler just beat the shit out of everyone again. I mean, it's like, people are like, you can't call him Tiger. It's like, well, he's won like 4 of his last 5 events. I mean, and he's dominating. I'm not saying he's Tiger, because that would be, it's like, I don't say anyone's Michael Jordan. But what this dude's doing, I mean, holy cannoli. So probably no golf this week, a lot of football, and let's roll. But before we dive into Field Yates, what I wanted to do is tell you about my close friends, Game Time, the official ticketing app of this podcast. I was at the gym today, and I looked in our locker room. We have like this big TV with a bunch of lazy boys. Everyone was in there in towels, just locked into a hockey game. NHL playoffs have started. Basketball, looked up. The Clippers just killing the Mavs. I'm like, oh, Lakers lose. Not going to lie, loved it. You want to go to one of these games? You want to go to a baseball game? Concert? I'd be lying if I didn't check out the Taylor Swift album. First take, not bad. You want to go see an artist? You want to get out and have some fun? Go to the Game Time app. Games, concerts, comedy shows. We got you covered. Promo code John, J-O-H-N, J-O-H-N. Your first pair of tickets, you will save $20. $20. In these inflationary times, with how much everything, I went to the grocery store the other day. I would have died for a $20 discount. Didn't get it, but I can give you one. So if you want a pair of tickets to any event, download the Game Time app, buy your first pair of tickets, promo code J-O-H-N. Very, very excited. A guy I've known for a long time, and I don't know if you've noticed, he feels like a rocket ship over there at the mothership. And you can find him this week, kind of a big week, and he just happens to be on ABC. Who is he, Howard Cosell? No, he's Field Yates.
I wish I were Howard Cosell. That would be pretty sweet, right? Just slightly more famous and had like a slightly bigger role on ABC's coverage of a lot of things relative to mine on the draft, but can't wait for it. Can't wait.
How many players have you watched for this draft?
Probably close to 400. I think I wrote up, graded 331 or two. So probably 400 or so in terms of total exposure. That process of whittling down that back end of the 400 was fairly straightforward. I mean, as you know, once you get past a certain number, and I'd argue that number is actually a lot smaller than the public probably realizes, so much of it is beauty in the eye of the beholder, right? I mean, I think most boards are going to have, you know, similar top 20 or 25 players. Once you get to like player 50, it's so subjective. So much of it is about, you know, team fit, system. Some of it's about how one area scout has evaluated the character of a prospect versus how a different area scout's evaluated the character of a prospect. And, you know, medicals, things like that all influence those things. But I think people get really fired up when it's day 4 and they hear that their team just drafted a 4th-round prospect in round 6 and they think that they've won the draft. When the reality is that our job as a draft analyst is to scout for all 32 teams when each of the 32 teams has such a different process and they have such different criteria they're using to grade these players that it's not quite as relevant and important within buildings as it is probably here in the public. But that's a huge part of my job, so you got to embrace it.
You know, before, I think a lot of people, obviously, if they follow the NFL, which as we know, a lot of people follow the NFL, know who you are, but I'm not sure they know your background. Can you tell a little bit about how you got started kind of in high school? And I'm pretty sure your college football lacrosse career, same school as a guy named William Belichick as well.
Yeah, again, slightly less famous than Howard Cosell on ABC, slightly less famous and accomplished than Bill Belichick at Wesleyan. But yeah, back in my late high school into my college days, I spent God knows how long. I think it was 4 summers. And then I tell people every disposable hour I had when I wasn't at school or at practice was down at the Patriots facility, kind of working as a grunt, sort of learning the football ins and outs. I called that my football Rosetta Stone, where I was learning, I guess, how the Patriots went about their business. But as you can imagine, given all the success they were having at that time and continue to have for 15 more years, that a lot of the league was emulating how they were going about their business. So the way that I was learning things, I think, is still pretty prevalent around the NFL. When I first got into that New England building, just as a quick aside, the number of heavy hitters that were in that building, which we didn't realize at the time, pretty astounding, right? Like Adam Peters was a scouting assistant. Brian Flores is a scouting assistant. You had guys like Jason Light on the scouting staff, Thomas Dimitroff, John Robinson, Scott Pioli. So that right there is what, four future NFL GMs. Monty Austin-Ford on that staff as well. Make it five right there. So Bob Quinn, that's six. You just go through that roster of people that were there. A lot of the coaches obviously are well-known because, you know, coaches have probably a little bit more notoriety than GMs, except for probably during this part of the draft cycle. But yeah, the Patriots days led into some time with Kansas City when Scott Pioli got hired out there. He had an opening on the scouting staff. So I got my teeth kind of cut there a little bit more. I got paid, not much, as you know, but I got paid a little bit to do some of that scouting work. And then I would love to tell you that I had like this perfect epiphany of what was going to be next. I wasn't totally sure what was going to be next, but I had an idea it might be the world of sports media. So it's been a different journey to get from where I started to where I am right now at ESPN, but certainly one that I think the scouting background has played a pretty darn influential role in.
Did you go to high school with Steven Belichick?
No, we didn't go to high school together, but we played against each other on the football and lacrosse fields. So fierce competitors.
Would you consider him a good buddy?
Yeah, he is a good buddy. He's the best. He's going to do awesome out there at Washington. I'm fired up for it's a big transition, obviously, to go from
for sure.
You know, the Patriots to the college football, especially with how the landscape has changed. But I'm proud of him for taking that leap of faith. And I had a chance to go out there for Washington Pro Day, which was not tied to Steve, but just had a chance to be out there for some ESPN assignments. And it's amazing how different the college game is now compared to like half a decade ago. It's also amazing what kind of facilities and access and resources these big time college programs have right now. It is absurd, man. They might have better facilities across the board.
How beautiful is that stadium?
It's ridiculous. Are you kidding me? That's like, cool. I'd have a hard time concentrating if I were Jed Fish trying to call offensive plays on the sidelines or Steve trying to call defensive plays on the sideline with that backdrop there. I don't know how often it's sunny in Seattle. It certainly wasn't sunny for much of my time out there, which is only about 36 hours. But I did Oregon and Washington about 2 weeks apart. And those two places, man, like I was at Oregon for the pro day for Bo Nix. And I was in there. I was walking through the indoor facility and I told somebody there, I said, this might be the nicest indoor facility that I've ever seen. And the response was, really? I mean, yeah. They go, oh, that's interesting because we're moving into the new one right next door about 6 months from right now. This is about to become the indoor facility for like the other sports besides football, right? Obviously, as we know, football is king in all these major college programs. So if you think there's serious cash going around in the NFL, just go step foot on one of these top, you know, 10, 15, 20 programs in college football. You get a real sense of where that money is.
You know what my theory is on those bad report cards? Some of them might be kind of crappy, but I wonder if it's a little overinflated. These guys are all coming from Alabama, LSU, Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon.
Of course.
And now it's like, listen, I pay you with that paycheck that's $10, $20, $30 million. Sorry, your chair is not personally up to your liking.
100%.
I think these guys are a little convoluted. Not saying that some of them don't need to improve, but I do wonder if some of these guys have a false sense of like, okay, I'm from college. Now I'm going to the pros like the Taj Mahal. It's like, no, actually, that's not the way it is.
That's an interesting point. And it kind of ties to something that may have come up during this conversation or may not. But I've been thinking about this a lot over the past 24, 48 hours is, you know, Jaden Daniels, who we think could go, maybe will go number two overall to the Commanders, took this visit to go to D.C. And his agent seemed to take issue with the fact he tweeted about, he used the emoji on top of a clip of Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk and Chris Sims during their show PFT Live, ripping the Commanders for having all the quarterbacks in at the same time, which didn't really bother me. I had no reaction to it, right? Because during my scouting,
they brought everybody. Like, they brought 20 guys in.
Yeah, we had tons of days where there was five prospects at once, and sometimes it was, you know, two guys at the same position. Then when I was in Kansas City 1 year, we were picking fifth overall. So if we had there was a year, I think that was the year that Russell Okung and Trent Williams both came out, and those guys both ended up being, I think, top six picks. Like, I don't think if we had those guys in the building at the same time, it was some affront to society, right? It was just, that's what you did. It was an easy way to knock out two pre-draft visits in one day. Maybe some of these guys had busier schedules than others. But I think it's a reminder of where these athletes are right now, right? And part of this is the influence of NIL, where, like, these athletes are made to feel like royalty now. And you probably are treated differently as the starting quarterback, I mean, the Heisman Trophy winner for sure, then even though college quarterbacks have probably already always had it pretty good, I'm sure the lifestyle for these quarterbacks, or these high-level athletes, is different now compared to where it was. I think the player empowerment era is kind of upon us, where they probably feel like they have more levers to pull, right? If you're bothered by something that a college is doing, there's the leverage of like five different transfer windows where you can say, I'm out, right? I mean, we're seeing it left and right in college football right now.
Dion,
I mean, what was it, 12 guys he lost this past week or something like that? But we're seeing, you know, Duke basketball has lost seven players to the transfer portal. That season's been over for what, 3 weeks now? So I do think there's a little bit of an interesting sort of adjustment the NFL teams are probably catching on to now, which is that some of the way that you have to kind of treat these players is evolving compared to where things were. And I'm not talking about 20 years ago or even a decade ago, even just like a few years ago. I think we're in a much different time.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just a job board. They help you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else. Did you know 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites? LinkedIn's the only one I use. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/JOHN. That's linkedin.com/JOHN to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, you're a Boston guy. You live in Boston full time, right?
Now, we've since moved down to Connecticut just to be closer to ESPN, but we were in Boston for a long time until recently. Yeah.
I consider you a Boston guy. You know, the Kraft-Belichick divorce felt less ugly at the time, you know, even though it felt a little forced when they had the press conference. It's gotten a little out of control, clearly, I would say. Here's another theory I'm going to run by you. Elliot Wolf said yesterday or 2 days ago, right, we're open for business. No different than Monty, no different than the Chargers. What if the Crafts, the easiest way to keep the conversation going negatively about you? Trade back, draft offensive linemen, wide receivers. You know the way to get people talking about something else? Draft a quarterback.
Not saying that
you wouldn't take a quarterback anyway, but I wonder if it's like, let's just take quarterback, guys. And it just gets all the conversation on Drake May or J.J. McCarthy immediately and off Bob a little bit. Because he's getting crushed, correct?
Yeah, I mean, people it has not been good. But here's what I would say. And the only reason why I would disagree with the theory about like moving on from the topic is that I think he had multiple opportunities, did Robert Kraft, to shift the narrative or move away from the topic. But while he, I think, has made it clear, and the director of that Patriots Dynasty piece has made it clear that ultimately it was in the director's hands to influence how that piece actually unfolded and what content they had on there. I mean, anybody who watched it certainly felt like there was, or at least many people that have watched it, including many former Patriots players and staffers, felt as though it was an inaccurate depiction of Bill Belichick's influence. And Bill, while he was in it briefly, I mean, certainly had very little in the way of interest in being a big part of that, right? I mean, he had very few words, it seemed like, there. So there are people in Boston, in the New England region, that feel like, you know, that documentary spent more effort trying to denigrate Bill Belichick than it did highlight the greatest dynasty in the history of the sport that might, I say might because, you know, the Chiefs have won three out of the last four, but that might never be replicated over a two-decade span. So, and then between that and then, you know, subsequent things that have taken place, it feels like Robert Kraft's had a chance to kind of calm things. And yet it doesn't feel like he's been as aggressive in calming things as I think he probably could be to allow people to turn the page. And Bill Belichick, I feel like, and I think Patriots fans that I had like a reasonable head on their shoulders respected Bill and were, you know, deeply conflicted when the Patriots decided to move on. I think they acknowledged, because Bill said there might have been, it might have been time, that they were sort of respectful of that part of it. But now it's like Bill is just as popular now as he has maybe was after like a Super Bowl win. Like, everybody's like, what are we doing talking about a guy who took us to 9 Super Bowls in anything other than the light of this is the greatest to ever do it? Why should the narrative be anything other than that? The reality is it shouldn't be, and it has become that. And I do think there might be an opportunity for Robert Kraft to maybe like put out the flames a little bit, because it is getting a bit out of control right now.
You know him and the family. I don't know him, and I'm offended for him. Like, I think it's ridiculous. You know, the way
it's ridiculous. Stuff,
it's like, give me a fucking break. Yeah. And listen, the Atlanta stuff, obviously Raheem Morris was a really good coaching candidate. So if you want to hire him, that's not that crazy. But some of these comments, like Carolina, not that interested. Like, give me a break.
I know.
Not that Bill would have been interested in them, but do you imagine that he's, because it's weird, right? He's going to be 74 next coaching cycle. A lot of moving parts in the league. Things change really fast. Do you think today, and I guess we'll see him next week with Pat again, like, do you think he's pretty pissed off, like, the way everything's going? Or is he just kind of in that mindset, he's so good at, like, compartmentalized, moving on? Because that's how he's been as a coach.
Yeah, I think it's more the latter, where he's kind of at peace with what took place. And I think ready to take on this challenge of being a draft analyst next Thursday night. And by the way, that's going to be must see, right?
How good was he with Pat the other day?
You know, it's unbelievable. Yeah, the two of them just obviously have a very natural chemistry, and Bill is going to be excellent on that draft broadcast next week, because he ain't going there without pretty darn good knowledge on these players, right? Like, I don't think Bill's going to show up and J.C. Latham from Alabama is going to come off the board. He's going to say, yeah, you know, don't know a whole lot about that guy, right? Like, you can imagine Bill's done some pretty serious tape study on many of these prospects. So that'll be cool to see on Thursday nights. And can we find a way to keep it going, like, through the entirety of the draft? I'm sure Bill has some knowledge about some guys that might end up going in round 7. But I do wonder if a couple of things is that there might be some people around the NFL after Thursday night, if they catch some of Bill's commentary, or maybe Friday once they're having a chance to catch up on it, that are saying to themselves, really? Like, a league which saw 8 coaching changes this offseason allowed this guy to remain a free agent? You better believe that there are some coaches who are feeling a little bit of pressure innately already, that after Thursday night's broadcast are going to be saying to themselves, I better start hot next year, because Bill is effectively the 33rd NFL coach now, right? I'm not saying he would take every job. I have no knowledge that he would take any specific job, but don't you think there's owners out there, they're going to say to themselves, if our team starts 1-5 and Bill Belichick is available to come on and take over on an interim basis, which, by the way, the
Rivers NFL style.
Exactly. This guy's just sitting there waiting for you. Like, you could, and there's zero process of naming somebody an interim head coach in the NFL, by the way. If a team wants to name Bill their interim head coach after six games, they can do it after one practice. Maybe it's one game. I need to find out the exact date at which you can name someone an interim head coach. Maybe it's after one game. But, like, that's when the window opens. And so I just would imagine that any team that actually thinks it's going to be good this year, that starts slow, the head coach is going to be feeling the pressure, realizing that the best ever is sitting, I was going to say standing on the sidelines. That would be the wrong way to put it, but it's sitting out for the season, or at least part of the season. But don't you think, and I haven't asked him this, I don't know this personally, but I would just imagine that when you're this close to the all-time wins record, and I think it's 15 wins away from tying Don Shula, like, you don't think Belichick wants that? I know the guy cares less about individual accolades than probably anybody, but he probably cares about the history of football more than anybody else on planet Earth right now. You have to imagine he's fueled by the possibility of being the all-time wins leader.
I said the other day on the podcast, obviously the NFC East is going to be circled. I do think the Eagles, like, they want the Sirianni thing to work. You know, Harry hired him.
Yep.
A little bit from obscurity. They're paying, I would, between Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio, you know, $4 or $5 million each. If they are successful, even if they got bounced in like the second round, if they won a playoff game, won the division, I think that they would try to figure that out. I think the Cowboys, I mean, they have a coach under his final year of his contract. And the Giants, who are a major wild card in this draft, if they suck again next year, John Mara did fire back-to-back coaches after 2 years. This would be Dable's third year, and the last 2 years would be really ugly. And obviously Belichick's, I don't want to say love affair, but he is very – he treats the Giants and the Jets like polar opposites, right?
Totally, yeah.
So I think that would be pretty intriguing. So to me, the Giants and the Cowboys, more than the Eagles – now, if the Eagles are terrible, then they're in play. But I they have so much talent, and now they got –
yeah, it'd be hard for them to suck. Yeah.
I think they're going to be okay. I think the Cowboys thing – lost some players, this Dak situation. Now, McCarthy's proven to be a good regular season coach. You got to give him that. It's just the playoffs. And then the Giants, like, I don't know where you stand. I agree with Schrager because I know how tied in he is with certain organizations. Clearly, they probably like J.J. McCarthy a little bit. But I don't think that helps them this year at all, bro. They draft J.J. McCarthy. It's like, you're no better on offense.
There, as you
think
and
that's going to happen? Because I know you went on his podcast. I'm just kind of assuming he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, I will certainly defer to Peter because of how tied in he is. So I think it's possible. My big thing with the Giants and J.J. McCarthy is if he falls to pick six, I'm cool with it. If they have to trade up from 6 to 4 and give away their 2025 first, that to me is such a scary proposition.
That's insane to go from 6 to 4.
I mean, it's insane because that might be 6 this year and 7 next year to go up to 4, right? That's just a crazy thing to do. But if you look at relevant trade-up comps in the semi-recent past, there aren't a ton of them. But remember, San Francisco and Chicago flipped 2 and 3 during 2018 draft, the Trubisky 2017 draft, the Trubisky year, the Mahomes year, and San Francisco got a bunch of extra picks. And by the way, San Francisco took Eric Armstead, right? They weren't even taking a quarterback, and they were able to get Chicago to move up one pick. So it might cost the Giants a freight, and that's the part that makes me nervous is, you know, I like JJ a lot. He's got a lot of really, really, really solid traits. I just don't know that I can afford to double pay, right? The 6th or 4th pick alone is an expensive investment. But to do that on top of potentially, you know, moving up to 4 and trading away multiple picks to get there, that to me is a little bit scary.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, Caleb's going to a pretty incredible situation for a number one overall pick. If we assume the betting markets and the way everyone's talking, Jaden goes 2.
Yep.
The Patriots is not a great situation. It just is.
No.
Roster-wise, new coach, the negativity, it could get ugly fast. That 4th pick's a major wild card. Like, if you are J.J. McCarthy, who knows? The Patriots could take him too. Whoever the guy.
I'd be surprised on that, yeah.
Okay. So let's say J.J.'s going to go 4. You should pray like Minnesota comes get you, right?
No doubt.
Even the Raiders, who got Devontae and some other – just something else. The Giants thing, that could be a tough situation, man.
Well, let me tell you what. I have thought about this, and I haven't actually done it, but I've thought about it. I've pondered this. Like, should I just make J.J. the 2nd or 3rd quarterback on the board for this reason? if JJ goes to Minnesota, there's a pretty decent shot he has the best or second best season as a rookie of any of the quarterbacks in the class, right?
He might even register, wide receivers, so he might get the Mahomes treatment, right? If Darnold's fine.
Yeah. So, but if he did play, throwing to Jefferson and Jordan Addison and TJ Hawkinson when he's healthy, two really good tackles, Aaron Jones, Brian Flores on defense, scheming that group up, did a heck of a job last year. Like, Minnesota could push for like 10 wins with JJ as a rookie, sure, and we'd be talking about him. Now, as we know, it's always about the long haul, right? Like, Mac Jones, 2021 draft, comes out, and by the end of the season, people are saying, should he have been the number one pick over Trevor Lawrence? Now he's backing up Trevor Lawrence. You know, it's all hyperbole because of the fact that we live in a 24/7, 365 news and reaction cycle. But ultimately, it's why your evaluations of the player going into the draft last only until the draft begins. Because the minute they wind up in a situation, whatever that situation is, the evaluation of that player is different. So, like, I think Jaden Daniels would have a better chance of a lot of rookie success with the Commanders and the Patriots. And same thing with Drake May, right? The Commanders are not a fully formed offense right now, but they've got six picks in the top 100. They got Terry McLaurin. They got Jahan Dotson, right? Like, I think they found something in Brian Robinson last year as a running back 2 years ago. Pretty solid player, right? Like, they've got enough there. You know, spent some money on a pair of interior offensive linemen, Nick Allegretti and Tyler Biotis from free agency. Like, that team could be decent this year on offense.
Draft whereas with the Patriots, second round.
Yeah. And like, the Patriots, they got so many holes, right? Like, on offense, you know, like, probably their best player right now is, I think, either Micah Nwenu, the right tackle, or Ramondre Stevenson, the running back. And in this league, like, it's just not a great sign if your best offensive player is potentially your running back, who I think is a good player, but not like, I don't think he's a top 10 back in the NFL. Point I'm saying is, the Patriots got some work ahead of them. I think they acknowledge that. So if I'm the Patriots, concurrent with drafting a quarterback at three is, and I know that this goes against sort of everything I think Robert Kraft wants to say publicly, is I'd message like, we're in this for the long haul. It's going to take some time here, right? Like, we need to find some wide receivers. We got to find some better offensive linemen. We just need some speed on this offense. And you can't knock out all of those priorities in one off season, especially when you don't have a quarterback in place during free agency. So wide receivers that are pondering, like, should I go to New England, are saying to themselves, maybe, but like, who am I catching passes from again? So it's a fascinating dynamic when you're trying to debate the ratings of these quarterbacks going into the draft, acknowledging that by Friday morning, my opinion of them could alter a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, clearly Jerod, pretty high-level guy. You've never heard a negative thing about him as a player, as a leader. Even as an assistant coach, he's been really good. Being the head man's a different animal. And, like,
totally.
Let's use Alabama as an example. Kalen DeBoer, that is not easy shoes to fill. And he doesn't have any SEC equity, but it's like, hey, guys, I went 110-10. I just got the Washington Huskies the national championship. I kind of know what I'm doing. So people are like, okay, yeah, let's just give this guy. Mayo can't be like, hey, I coached the Raiders for the last 4 years, made the playoffs a couple times. I know what I'm doing. Or I coached my alma mater for the last four. You know, he has zero equity as the head coach. So that thing can – you could see it coming from a mile away. You know,
totally.
If it goes bad. If I'm a quarterback, which it feels like it's going to be Drake May, listen, he's obviously a project. I would just bet against that because I think the first couple years – Alex Smith, who wasn't as talented as Drake May, probably physically, those first 4 or 5 years were one of the ugliest things ever. And it took Jim Harbaugh and Andy Reid changing his life. But I mean, that's a long way to go for a rookie quarterback. So they're keeping his fingers crossed.
No doubt. But they need to message that. And I know that's hard to do, right? Because no owner wants to come out and say, like, could be 5-12 this year, guys.
For sure.
Right. But I think that's important. Like, quarterbacks rarely ever wait anymore, right? I mean, Patrick Mahomes is such an outlier in the fact that he sat out all but one game. Teams, it's hard to resist. I mean, even the Bears.
The Niners tried it with Trey Lance, but Jimmy got hurt. He played a couple games.
Yeah. And it sounds like, you know, Trey probably is one of those, and we'll see. He can still rewrite the narrative. But, you know, Trey might have just been like he was a swing for the fences, right? But the bottom line is those guys are so much the outlier as opposed to the standard in terms of when you expect a guy to actually play. So, for the Patriots and Drake May, if it is Drake, and I, if I had to, you know, sort of cast my bet as of the time of this conversation, my feeling would be that it's Drake has a decent chance of being the third pick. But you need to also be prepared for him sitting out for a while, because if you put him in that, you know, you and I know this, we talk about quarterbacks busting. Sometimes teams fail the quarterback too, right? Like,
for sure,
not putting the right pieces around him, too bad much coaching, organizational instability, like that stuff all is real. And I think Drake is the kind of guy that like might need some time. I'm not, if he goes to New England, there's no denying he could end up being an absolute stud. Like, the kid's got so much talent, it's ridiculous. Like, I think the narrative around him actually become a little bit unfair. He just might need some more seasoning as opposed to somebody like Jaden Daniels, who, by the way, he's got 3 more years of starting experience on him. Drake started 2 full seasons in college. He was a redshirt freshman, or he took a redshirt year. Jaden Daniels walked onto Arizona State's campus as a 17-year-old, was under center, thrown to Ayuk right away, and played 5 straight years. Like, he just got a lot more experience underneath him. Like, he's got a lot more high-level reps than Drake May does.
Okay, last quarterback here. Michael Penix, who might as well have been thrown to Brandon Ayuk at Washington. Very polarizing guy. In a vacuum, you didn't have to factor in the variables. He's clearly one of the best players, but you can't quite do that, right? The age, the injuries. The age doesn't bother me as much as the injuries. And the other thing that I can't get out of my head, partly because I had a little money on it, him against Michigan, which Michigan was an NFL team. And he didn't get touched all season long. I think 11 sacks going into that game. He was – And he doesn't get touched. I mean, he's a top 10 NFL quarterback, not touched. And that's how well he throws it. That's not really the NFL, though. Like, you do get touched, and you do get moved off your spot. And it got derailed fast. I like him. I'm rooting for him. But I can't act like that doesn't give me a lot of concern. That I know it was only one game. It was a pretty big game. Opposite C.J. Stroud. It was only one game, but you saw in Georgia, you're like, Jesus, did you see that?
Yeah. And right.
Carried over. So, getting hit. Same thing with Oregon. When Penix, and Oregon's also very talented NFL-like team, would hit him a lot, and you felt by the end of the game, you're like, God, and I respect his toughness. Is this guy going to be able to get up? That concerns me.
Sometimes in scouting, it's seeing what you choose to see. So, like, you know, the Michael Penix believers will point to the game just before Michigan against Texas, where he was lights out. I mean, the guy was avoiding pressure in the pocket. Yeah, unbelievable, right? So you put that tape on in the scouting meeting, you can imagine what the reactions would be. The age does not bother me as well. The medical, I can't say bothers me or doesn't bother me, because I don't have a doctor who I'm consulting with who would sign off on it or would say, hey, you know, that's a medical red flag for us. So I don't know that I can speak with complete certainty on it. I would say that some teams have expressed less concern than others to me about Michael Penix Jr.'s knee. So, but the skill set, he's probably been, and I've said this a couple times on ESPN, the hardest player for me to pinpoint exactly where I should be mocking, right? Because you talk to people in the league that will tell you, hey, you know you have him at 34 on the overall big board, but I think he's not getting out of the first 13 picks. We know that run of 11, 12, 13, as of right now, is Minnesota, Denver, Vegas. There are other people I talk to who are like, he will go in the second round. There's no two ways about it. So he's generated more split projections on mock drafts than maybe any prospect that I've studied this year. And the good is not just good, it's freaking outstanding. But every player's got those strengths and limitations, and the age, the mobility, and I know he tested well at the pro day, but he's not as athletic as Jaden Daniels or Drake May or Caleb Williams, that much is for sure. Some of those things that Michael Penix Jr. does not do compared to those guys does make him a really difficult projection.
What's your hottest draft take?
Now, I'm a believer. I'm a Chop Robinson believer. He's a divisive prospect. He had an unbelievable combine in terms of like the 40 specifics. He's got a great first step. The flashes are awesome. He had 11 and a half career sacks, though. Maryland for a year, 2 years at Penn State, had 4 sacks this past season. 2 of them came against UMass. So there are some that are saying, like, yeah, he's got all the tools, but why didn't he put it together more often? I'm a believer in Chop Robinson, and I think there's a chance he ends up being the second edge rusher taken next Thursday night, which would, I think, probably run counter to how a lot of people are currently forecasting it. But if you can find a team that wants to put the emphasis on the, you know, the athletic ability, the first step quickness, the bend, the torque, and some of the competitiveness in the running game, like, it wouldn't surprise me if there are teams that are saying, yeah, top 16 player in the draft.
Yeah, I know you got to get out of here, but I want to hear your take on this. Joe Alt, I did a little thing like a couple days ago. Yep. 6'8", 6'9", tackles, and I get this guy's a better athlete than McGlinchey.
Yep.
They do give me some concern because it is difficult. And I know people say he's closer to Colton Miller, but it's like, I don't know. I mean, he didn't test as well, though. He's playing football, not testing combine. So
sure,
I get it. But what's your take on 6'9 guys? He's not Michael Jordan as an athlete, but he's a good athlete playing against a league full of guys, 6'2", 6'3", that could all bend. It's hard to get that low, and it's given a lot of guys trouble.
Yeah, and he can really bend. Like he's a pretty darn fluid athlete. Like, you know, he's got incredible bloodline, son of an NFL offensive lineman. You know, his father John in the Chiefs Hall of Fame. His brother's a hockey player, was drafted in the second round in the
decent
NHL.
Genetics.
Like, yeah, they got some pretty good genes over there at the Alt family. I do have him as a top ranked tackle. My gap's a little bit narrower between him and the next couple guys, and I think some in the same role at different places have Joe Alt. I don't think it's quite as clear cut above everybody else. I think he's number one, but I think you can make a compelling case for Olu Fashanu from Penn State, Troy Fautanu from Washington, if you believe he's a left tackle. It's a good tackle class. It's why I will continue to point, and maybe Tennessee will just do the very obvious thing and take Joe Alt 7. But I continue to wonder if Tennessee, who already traded multiple picks last year to move up to get Will Levis, and next year's 2025 third is already gone as well. That was part of the Legarius Sneed trade, which, by the way, those are justifiable investments, but they're a little short on draft capital relative to other teams picking in the top seven. I do wonder if Tennessee might be a potential trade back team, and they say, we can have Joe Alt at 7, or we could have Olu Fashanu at 11 or 12 or 13 or 15, or, you know, Troy Fautanu at 15 and feel pretty good about the outcome all the same.
Yeah, I think the problem is the Cardinals, the Chargers, the Titans. I think there are a lot of teams that want to head.
Everybody wants to go backwards.
Head the wrong way. So it's going to be interesting because some of these teams are going to get stuck. Field Yates, ABC, no big deal. See you soon, buddy.
I appreciate you having me on, man.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7, U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
I'm not guarding like that, CJ.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. He's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You put it off long enough, it's time to replace your tires. Tire Rack has tires that will elevate your drive. Touring tires for commuter comfort. Performance tires for sporty handling. All-terrain tires for on- and off-road adventure. Go to TireRack.com to get started. Not sure where to begin? Use the Tire Decision Guide to get a personalized tire recommendation, the right tires for how, what, and where you drive. Choose from the full line of Hankook tires. Ship fast and free to a recommended installer near you. Or choose the convenience of mobile tire installation. They'll bring your new tires to your home or office and install them on site. Doesn't get much easier than that. Go to TireRack.com/Colin to see their Hankook test results, tire ratings, and consumer reviews, and be sure to check out all their current special offers. Great tires, great deal. What more could you ask for? That's TireRack.com/Colin. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be.
Okay, time for a little Middlecoff mailbag. At John Middlecoff, at John Middlecoff is the Instagram. DMs wide open. Very, very easy to get involved in the show. Fire in those DMs, like my guy Riley here, and get your question answered. Fire in. Wide open. Holler. Other than Patrick Mahomes, should any quarterback make that kind of money? Mahomes is a Hall of Fame generational quarterback, up there with the greats. Shouldn't everyone else make 30% less because they need more talent around them to compete? Good question. Mahomes isn't even the highest, not even close. I mean, there are several guys now making more than him, right? Herbert makes more, Burrow makes more, Lamar makes more, Hurts makes more. So you got a lot of guys, you know, he took, quote-unquote, a team-friendly deal. It's just not the way sports work. It's not the way the world works, really, right? Things get more expensive, especially in the world we're living in, as time goes by. So, yeah, in theory, 100%, he should be the highest-paid player by a substantial margin, right? I totally believe that. But that's not the way the business works. So, like, we can talk about it, and I've been talking about forever, like, there should be a second tier. Like the Dak Prescott's, the Kirk Cousins, if you got Mahomes and Lamar making 45, 50, like, those guys should make 30. We talked about it last show with Tua, but it just doesn't work that way. You know, if you factor in the importance to the television ratings, which is the business, to, for example, the NBA, LeBron and Steph Curry should make each like $150 million. And even Jokic, who's the best player in the NBA, people don't watch his games relative to those guys. The ratings were awful last NBA Finals. So their value is incredibly high. But they all make the same. I mean, give or take a few million, depending on when you sign the contract. So I think a lot of people in business say this all the time. Like, timing is a big part of success or failure, right? Look at Mark Cuban. Mark Cuban got really rich because he sold at the top in like 99 or 2000, the internet TV. Sold for, I forget the exact number, but 6 months, a year later, it was worth nothing. So it's like, things change. Now, that's not the way it works in quarterback contracts, but are we living in a world where Brock Purdy in a year is going to be making more if he has another good year than Patrick Mahomes? I don't agree with it, but it's conceivable. So it's like, yeah, it's just not the setup. The way the cap leagues worked, it's never going to be. So it's kind of a dumb conversation. It's kind of the conversation we have a lot when it comes to should you get one contract on your team if you draft the guy, not count. I think we all agree, like, yeah, it's a pretty good idea. Should the quarterback contract, if you've drafted the player, count for 50% against your salary cap? People are like, yeah, that's fair. But none of these ideas ever happen. And it's like, great think tank ideas. It's just, it doesn't even feel like we've ever got remotely close to any of that stuff. It's like, what are they going to do at the league meetings? Oh, they're going to ban the hip drop tackle. They're going to change the kickoff rule. They never change the financial setup for players that way. What are your expectations for Seattle this year? That's a good question. I think they are a team to keep an eye on this week. Because I look at them a lot differently if you go, well, they've added Michael Penix. I'm like, okay. Now we're cooking. If Geno Smith's their starting quarterback, we know what they are. And let's face it. We can talk a lot of shit about Pete Carroll in terms of relative to, like, they had really stalled the last couple years. The defense was terrible. But Pete Carroll's a Hall of Fame coach. And the chances that Mike McDonald, who was an elite defensive coordinator, is as good of a head coach as Pete Carroll, I mean, the chances are just slim to none. As crazy as that sounds, because you're like, ah, oh, Pete's been bad. Yeah, might want to Google the guy's resume. And obviously, most people listening to this podcast knows he's really successful. But so it could be a doubt. You have a great wild card at coach, and your quarterback has proven that he has a ceiling. Really good guy, easy story to root for, but can only get you so far. So I don't know. I'm kind of interested. Do you take a quarterback high in this draft?
Because if you do, then and depending on who it is, I'm like, damn, who knows? Maybe they trade two first-round picks and trade up. Take a big swing. I wouldn't say it's off the table. Hey, John, hope you've been well. Been an active listener for a couple months now, and I'm hooked. I like this guy. I grew up in the Midwest, and TV wasn't a big deal until the Cardinals or the Rams were playing. We still remember the greatest show on turf era. Always a Rams fan. Not hopping on the Chiefs bandwagon since everyone here did. My question is this. How many people prefer podcasts over listening to TV? Talking about sports. Obviously, Colin is great when he comes on, but I'm usually working. I get all my information from podcasts. I have a guy for everything. A guy for sports, business, faith, and honestly, sometimes me and my wife just play true crime podcasts for fun while we cook. Maria does that as well. I have found myself replacing the TV with podcasts. I have you and Colin for sports, and I listen to a lot of other subjects as well. Have the generations just adopted this form of getting information? Honestly, podcast information just seems better, more logical, and more entertaining. I would say I've always been a big audio guy, but growing up, right, in your example, pre-podcasts, you just had to listen to whatever was on the radio. So if you like sports, whoever your sports talk radio hosts were locally, it's who you were forced to listen to, and then depending on where you were nationally, whatever you got, right? Depending on, you know, what affiliates, what city you lived in. But I've always been a huge audio guy. And the moment streaming / podcasts over the last 5 years, my audio input has grown exponentially. I'm with you. I'm not proud to admit this. I don't read enough. I read very little, to be honest with you, besides like articles on the internet. But I've felt like I've never taken in more information. And I believe that's from podcasts as well as audiobooks. I just started the Sam Walton audiobook. Pretty interesting. But the amount of podcasts I listen to, like you said, for like different things. Like, hey, I got a couple NBA podcasts. I got like 5 golf podcasts. I don't really listen to football podcasts unless like Rosillo's talking about it or something. And a lot of business podcasts. So I'm with you. I listen to, you know, Colin. It's like, sometimes because of my office setup, I can watch, you know, an hour or whatever. But if I'm on the go, I listen to him. I listen to his podcast or the best of at the end of the day. So I'm with you. And as someone who started his career in radio, and I'm not some radio diehard of like from the business. I actually thought the business was kind of a racket. And I could see it coming at the end of my time doing that. Now, it's become way bigger. The audio's always been a powerful medium, but yeah, I would imagine that, think of everywhere you look, and this speaks for music as well, because of the streaming ability, how often do you go somewhere and not see countless people with headphones in their ears? So yeah, I mean, I hate to disagree with you, and I'm glad this is that way, but I knew like 5 years ago when I first got into podcasting, financially started making any money, I was like, we're on something here. Like, this thing is going to be massive. And even less than that, I mean, I started podcasting in 2016. Probably didn't make any money till 17. But it's a powerful, audio's never going away. Just like, you know, television, video's never. I mean, I watch a lot of YouTube on my phone. So I consume a lot of video. Or at my desk, like I have YouTube going. You know, and I have YouTube TV, which is essentially TV, obviously, but I watch a ton of YouTube. I watch a ton of YouTube and listen to a ton of podcasts. I haven't read a newspaper not named the Wall Street Journal in 5 years. I mean, dead serious. Unless someone sends me an article, I don't go. Think about that. I'm not even 40 years old. I grew up in a home where we got Sacramento Bee, San Francisco Chronicle, Davis Enterprise. My dad kind of got into the stock market late in life. Like his dad died. His brother had died in Vietnam. So he didn't, his mom was already dead, didn't have any siblings. Sold, you know, his dad's house. It was like, what am I going to do with, I think at the time, should have held on to it longer, but like 800 grand. So he just invested it and he's like, God, stock market's incredible. This was when he was probably like 60. And so he started getting, so he added the Wall Street Journal. I mean, if you went to John Middlecoff's parents' house, 8-9 years ago, there were 6 newspapers in the driveway. Six. It was the Woodland Press Democrat sometimes would come to. I don't even know if they subscribed, but they would just throw it out the window. I don't know anyone that reads a newspaper beside an article going viral or whatever. So, well, we still are taking in information. I still want my information. Where do I get it? How do I get it? And that's where podcasts, we like audio and we like video. I've always said, like, I don't care. I just go where the consumer would go. If podcasts failed tomorrow, I would just go wherever I had to go to find the audience. And that's where I knew one thing was clear when I was in radio. I'm like, this is not sustainable. Everyone using their phone. The other powerful thing is when you're in a car, right? The overwhelming majority of people connect their phone to their car. It's why music radio is so fucked. Like, if you're going to listen to music, you're not going to give it what the I still kind of do every once in a while, but the majority of younger people don't. They stream Apple Music, Spotify, Pandora, whatever, to their car. And I started seeing it. This is like 2015, 16. These radio stations started going under. Sports talk's no different, right? Good question. Do you think Jordan Love should be paid as a top 10 quarterback salary as it's currently rumored? He looked great at the end of the year, but it looked dicey for the first half of the season. I think Love is better, but could it be worth the wait a season like you suggested with Tua and just paying a premium? What I think would be fair, right, you could get a lower cost right now. Like, if you just put 4 years, $120 million in front of him, and guaranteed 80. So it's like, what would that average? 30 a year? Would he sign that? He might. Like, I mean, he's never made any money. You're offering me 85 guaranteed, 30 a year. He might, but he also might not. But would you just wait instead, if, you know, or maybe that's 150, 5 years, 150, you know, it's hard. I mean, he's, like you said, he's played 6-7 good games. What probably is the prudent move, even if it you would have to pay a little more, why not give it like till mid-October? Let's just see 5-6 more games. Because there were games last year, let's face it, I don't think it's hyperbole, he looked like Aaron Rodgers. He was fucking incredible in certain games. You're like, this is unreal. And like most of us, we didn't know anything about him because he never played. That's where I think makes us tough, because everyone was kind of going, God, what the hell is this guy? But he never played. And then by the middle of the year, he started getting his kind of feet under him, and he was really confident. You're like, geez, Luis. Now, part of being a good player, what makes Josh Allen, what makes Lamar, what makes Patrick Mahomes, these guys good players every single year. Peyton Manning and Tom Brady did it for like 40-plus years combined. Every year, showing up, playing well. Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, every year. Right? There can't be these ups and downs. I mean, you can have a down year, but if over the course of 10 years you've had one down year, like, you've proven it over the period of time. It's always what made Eli so maddening. Like, he was kind of a roller coaster, right? You like your high-end guys to be good every year. You know, Jalen Hurts, I know statistically was all right, but if you watch last year, you're like, God, something's missing here. So it's where it does get challenging. Say what you want about Cousins or Dak, you kind of know what you're getting. So I would say, is there a number right now that he would sign? Like, would he sign 3-year, $100 million extension right now? If I guaranteed 85? So it's basically like 33 a year. Like, would he sign that right now? Because it'd be pretty hard to turn down if you've never made that much money. And you're like, well, what if it does go bad? So I don't know. He's a fascinating... It's just a fascinating situation. Kind of unprecedented. Because usually guys... Even Baker, that signs a contract this offseason, he did have years before of playing. He's played a ton of games, right, in Cleveland. It's like Jordan Love has one season as a full-time starter. But, like, by the end, you look pretty damn good. Knowing how aggressive Howie and the Eagles are and how stacked the roster is, if Jalen Hurts has another mediocre year passing the football, do they start looking for another quarterback like they did when Carson Wentz had doubts?
I think they're pretty into Jalen Hurts. Like, it would have to get pretty ugly pretty fast. They're paying him a lot of money. Signed a massive contract. Like, Carson signed a big one. This thing's in a different stratosphere because of the guaranteed money changed so dramatically over, like, a four-year span. So my guess would be he's getting a long leash. Like, they're in. Now, you never know. Like, Sirianni got fired. Would they go with someone else? It is a little complicated, but I think he's going nowhere. My wife and I greatly disagree on this, and I can't think of a wiser business savant than you to weigh in. Picture this. You wake up on a Saturday morning, and the undeniable craving hits. Fresh, hot donuts. As a guy, you know, can be a little chubby, battles my weight. I'm not a donut guy. More of a croissant guy, ham and cheese. The only problem is you're super comfortable in bed and don't want to get up. You also don't want to tip someone to get it for you. Talk about a fugazi. What a dilemma. But here's the solution. Dronuts. I know the name is incredible. Simply order your dozen donuts on the app and the drone drops the donuts right at your house. No human contact or tipping needed at all. Patent pending. Can you imagine a better business venture? I would be a little uncomfortable. Well, I am. There's, like, where I live, the Scottsdale private jet where all the rich guys fly out of, you can't even fly drones in this area because, like, the planes kind of fly right over the general area. Do you want drones flying over your house in your backyard? It's one thing for a guy to come up to your front door and leave a bag of donuts. It's another thing, the drones flying over your house and over other houses. I think there'd be a lot of pushback on that. Ultimately, if you get a dozen donuts, again, I'm not a donut guy, so I don't know. I'm just going to pick a number. Let's say a dozen donuts is $30. Is that high or low? I don't know. I'm just picking that number. You're tipping DoorDash $3-4. So I see what the Dronuts is a good name, but I don't think a lot of people, young and old, want drones flying around everywhere. I think we're a long way from that. I think there would be a lot of pushback on just drones, even if they have. The other thing, wouldn't you need a relatively decent drone to carry food? And are you only doing one, how many dozen donuts can it carry? Like, how many boxes? Just one and do an individual going back and forth? Draft question from Pete. You were a scout and went through December to late April draft process with people in management above you. Listening to all the mock drafts, player analysts, etc. on ESPN talk shows, Fox Sports, putting down Colin, his ways of explaining things are amazing. What does team management say when they hear a mock draft rumor of the offseason false reports? Can you give us some stories? Well, I think when you work in it, everyone's paying attention to the mock drafts, right? We used to accumulate them all in the office and have a packet. Like, if you're Howie Roseman or Chris Ballard, you're reading the mock drafts. But ultimately, the difference of what those guys are doing than everyone on television, besides, like, Schefter, who, like, is legit knowledgeable in terms of, like, he's just spewing knowledge that he's hearing, is as a GM, I'm constantly talking to the other GMs. So I get an idea and feel for kind of what's going on. Not necessarily what players they're going to pick, but just would this team trade? Would this team not trade? How dead set are they? What they're asking for? So I think it didn't matter what I thought. I could watch all the information, have takes. There's only one decision maker in the room. Maybe two if they have to work together, the coach and the GM. So a lot of us, like the worker bees, the scouts, that whole time from December to April is just all about nonstop accumulating information. That's really what you're kind of dead set on, finding information on every player and what you're hearing about them and what other teams think about them. You're not as consumed. Like, it's not really your job to kind of know about other teams, I would say, because what they're going to want out of you, like, second round comes, hey, this guy kind of fell. All of a sudden, the GM and the owner are like, hey, what's this guy's deal? Right?
and he's from your area, and you've been through Texas four times, and you got eight contacts, and you've been building, you know, a scouting report on and off the field on this player for 12 plus months, you better know your shit. They don't care. Like, hey, what was Kuiper's mock again? So I think that stuff, it's very entertaining. I do it for a living, essentially, now. But inside, that it doesn't matter as much. You have to know your players. It's on your GM to kind of be following the rumors and all that stuff, to know what's true and not. Your job is the rumors on your players, you better know. You better know it all. And if you don't know it, figure out a way to find out, because they're going to look at you. All of a sudden, the fifth round comes. Like, wait, we had a second round grade on this guy. What's going on? What are you hearing? What's happening? Why is this free fall? Is there something off the field? So you're kind of always doing that. Something that's been pissing me off for years. Why the heck does the NFL start in August? It's still summer. I'm from Iowa, and we have shit weathers for 4 months a year. Perfect for football. I'm still able to be outdoors golfing, fishing, hiking, and pickleballing through September. Why doesn't the NFL push everything back a month and give each team two bye weeks? Stretch this thing into March. Let high school and college be the ramp up and get the shine until we get the best sporting events for the year. I hate this answer. It's always been this way, so it's never going to change, but it's kind of always been that way. I also think it doesn't really start in August. They just have training camp in August. I mean, the football season, college starts September 1st, and the NFL starts September 8th. So I think that I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. It ain't changing. The NFL, I hear what you're saying with bad weather, but to me, the NFL is the one team or the one sport, college as well, that doesn't need to worry about that. The other leagues they better transition their sports, because like you said, March or whatever, the NFL shines in February, March, and April, right? Free agency, the combine, the draft, all these rumors through the Super Bowl up till this week is a really, really big time. And then OTAs is really, really big as well. So like the reason OTAs kind of works, coaches are constantly talking, players are kind of, it just kind of keeps everyone. The NFL has now become an 11-month sport. The month they take off is really July. The end of June, early July. Or I guess, you know, summer break for NFL teams is usually, give or take, June 10th through July 20-ish. Some 22, some 18, some 24, but give or take. Coaches might come in a week earlier. Got a question for the mailbag. From what I've heard on your pod, it sounds like you're pretty high on Penix. I'm a Broncos fan, and I'm hopeful we take Penix at 12. I know some people have a second-round grade on him, but he has dominated, while healthy, for 2 years playing great teams. Am I overthinking it, or should we take Penix and live with what he produced? To me, if you're a Broncos fan, you get Penix, you should be really, really excited. I mean, who are your quarterbacks right now? Seriously, who are the Broncos quarterbacks? Stidham, do they have another quarterback on the roster? They signed a guy this offseason? Not that I can remember. I mean, they gave Stidham 2 years, $10 million. I mean, I think it's pretty clear, unless you do a massive trade-up, Penix or Bo Nix, if they draft a quarterback, it's going to be one of those two guys. And I'll take Michael Penix over Bo Nix every day of the week and 50 times on Sunday. Now, a lot of people think that they're going to go with Bo Nix as their quarterback, but I don't know. I would want Michael Penix. If I am these teams, the Raiders, the Broncos, the Minnesota, if I don't trade up and I just stay and I get Michael Penix, I would be very, very excited. It's risky, but shit. So Drake May, Jaden Daniels are risky. Hell, Caleb Williams is risky. It's the NFL. I get Michael Penix? Yes. He's been injured before. Yes. He did not look good against Michigan. But holy shit, he looked good 95% of the time he was at Washington. And he looked really good. So if I was a fan and we just get this guy in the teens or the 20s, if he doesn't go in the first round, I'd be stunned. I mean, I would be floored. That guy makes it to the second round, which feels impossible. Now, a lot of people don't think that these teams are going to take him in the early teens. To time will tell, but I would be excited. Appreciate everyone. Keep firing in those DMs.
The Volume.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.